the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
And we welcome you back to the program. It's another hour of the best of money information, and it's all just ahead. You've got a chance to get involved. I'll tell you what, you can take part in the show right now. What a privilege, right? Sure. No, I mean that. We got your money questions answered right here. More strategies for you are coming up this hour, more solutions, and more Bucket Strategy Investing. This is what we talk about on this program. Our professor, Rick Plum, here with me once again from Lucia Capital Group. I'm Johnny Dean. Money questions asked, answered, et cetera, right here. So we'll take your phone calls, your emails. Also, those are just ahead. We got some lines open for you. Give us a call right now if you got a question on retirement, annuities, whatever it is. 877-PLANNER, our number. Hey, you know what? Maybe you have a rollover decision to make. We can talk about those as well. Anything at all on any one of the many topics that we discuss on this show, you give us a call, 877-752-6637. Spells out PLANNER right here. You can also send your emails here to us in the studio, wealthed.com, our website, W-E-A-L-T-H, wealthed.com. You go where you'd see the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page. One of our many mantras here. Mantra? Here, I suppose if you can call it that, is that everyone should have some kind of a retirement strategy. That's why we remind you, once again, right here, that a good strategy is what makes your retirement work for you. It's one that fits your unique needs, your unique goals. You give the people at Lucia Capital Group a call, they'll set you up with a bucket strategy of your own. Talk to Professor Rick Plum or anyone at Lucia Capital Group. Their off-air number is 800-644-1150. 800-644-1150. You schedule an appointment with a Brain Trust member. You get yourself started on the right track to retirement. Again, 800-644-1150 is the number off the air. A lot of stuff to talk about this hour. It's a budget proposals and all that stuff. We will get to that, but got to take your phone calls first. 877-PLANNER. We had a couple people on hold. We got them back on the line now during the news, so we will take them, but we still have two lines open at that number, 877-PLANNER. Let's start the hour off with Randy in Dallas, Texas. Randy, thanks for hanging on. How can we help you today?
Hey, guys. Great show. Appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
Okay. I'm looking at strategies, and there's one that has popped up that I haven't heard of before, and I know you guys have probably heard it, but it involves single premium whole life insurance and cash value for real estate investing.
So what are they telling you that it can do for you?
Well, it's you're taking money out of a cash, your whole life insurance, you're taking cash out of that that's tax-free and investing in real estate.
Well, let's step back a minute. You mentioned a single premium insurance policy, correct?
Whole life, yes, sir.
Okay, so you're going to start this insurance policy today, tomorrow, next week, whenever it is, with a one-time lump sum of X amount of dollars. How long between that deposit and when you want to take the money out for an investment are they talking about?
6 months.
Okay, and so they're telling you that the money that's coming out is going to be tax-free because you're borrowing it, or what's happening?
Yeah, you're taking a loan out on your cash value.
Okay, take the card that has their phone number and rip it up.
Okay.
These guys do not know what they're talking about. A single premium insurance policy does not create tax-free income. Yes, a life insurance policy properly structured, paid for over time, where it does not break what they call the modified endowment contract limit, you can ultimately pull money out of it on a tax-free basis, if done right, to do whatever you want with it. A single premium policy will never qualify for the tax-free distribution later in time, 6 months, 6 years, 60 years. The death benefit, the death benefit will be tax-free. If you happen to die, the death benefit that your heirs receive will be tax-free. That's not being messed up. But a single premium policy does not create tax-free income from life insurance. And so these people are trying to sell you. The other side of it is just putting money in today. For one thing, look at the illustration. Let's just use round numbers. You put in $100,000 today. What is the surrender value at the end of 1 year? The insurance companies, insurance policies are not short-term savings accounts. They're not designed for putting money in today and taking money out 6 months. You won't be able to get all your money out in 6 months. You put in $100,000 now, you may get $30,000-$40,000 out at max, you know, maybe a little higher on some of the better policies, although the better policies have lower commissions, so these guys aren't selling them to you. You're not going to be able to get the money out. Insurance takes time. There are fees. There are expenses. That broker that's trying to sell it to you is probably making a nice commission. And so the insurance company, sure, you gave them $100,000, but they don't have $100,000 working for you anymore. They've given the broker a huge chunk of that, X percent. So they have time. They need you to keep the policy there for time so it can build back up and be able to, you know, and they have fees involved. And so they use those fees to offset what the broker took up front. So this is not a good idea. Horrible idea.
I knew you'd have the answer.
Well, and I'm not against permanent policies. I am against improperly sold anything, and this one is definitely improperly sold.
Okay.
And as I said, if you're going to take the money out in 6 months, just don't put it into the policy.
Absolutely. Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay, Randy, thank you for the call. If you have any other questions on this, hold on, and we can talk to you more about it off the air.
The more I think about this really ticks me off because they're putting money into a policy today and getting a commission on all the money he's putting into the policy today, knowing that he's going to take it out in 6 months.
There's just something wrong with that. Well, explain for people who are...
He's getting a commission on something. There's no way to make the money back in 6 months. And then he's, just don't put that much... If he's going to take the money out in 6 months, don't put it in the policy. Just to get a commission. See, that should be criminal.
Well, now, the fact that you're getting hot under the collar, people's ears perked up. And they're saying, wait a minute, what's he talking about? Let's back up for a second. Randy's got some money.
Right, they were talking about sum of money.
Saying, which would indicate when he said it's a single premium type of policy, which means that you give them a whole chunk of money all at once.
Right, so, and let's just, for example, use $100,000. So you put it in $100,000, and it doesn't even matter what the death benefit is, but you want to run the death benefit balance. If you're doing this for an investment purpose, you want to run the death benefit as low as possible. Unfortunately, most pure life insurance salesmen who would do something like this and tell you that it's tax-free wouldn't be running a low death benefit. They'd buy as much death benefit as they could. Why?
Because the commission's
bigger. Because the commission's based on the death benefit. Yeah. It's based on a combination of things, but the higher the death benefit, the better the commission is. That just goes without saying. So, but to turn around and take money out in 6 months, that is just wrong.
Randy's doing is not wrong.
Oops.
There's your plums down.
Oops.
What is the fact that he's taking it out, that he needs the money in 6 months.
Right.
So the problem is not on Randy's side. The problem
just
is on the broker's side
how
or the person selling
money,
it.
How much money do you really think that you can earn in an insurance policy in 6 months on a brand new policy?
After they've already paid the person who sold it a commission, too, by the
way. So how much tax-free growth am I going to get out of this? Now, if he said, I'm 25 years old and I've inherited this money and I want to be able to do something with it 10 years from now, 20 years from now, okay. Single premium, no. Staged in at the right level so that I get the tax-free treatment later on, it can make some sense. But it takes time for a life insurance policy to work. There are fees. And I like life insurance as an investment for the right person. It's just not for everybody. In fact, it's not for the majority of people.
We're talking permanent cash value life insurance.
That has a cash value component to it. And it can be structured properly, a tax-free benefit in the future. Not in 6 months future, not even 6 year future. 10 years is minimum for the real working because of the cost of the policy. We know that insurance companies are not in this for philanthropic endeavors. They're not here to not make money. So how does an insurance company make money? If you give them $100,000 today, they pay a broker today, and then you take the money out in 6 months.
So
it doesn't work that way.
Now, what are they telling? I mean, obviously they're not telling Randy or anybody else what you're saying here. What they're saying is, hey, you have tax-free growth.
Yeah, put in $100,000, borrow out 40 of it, tax-free, but you still have all this wonderful tax-free growth happening in the life insurance policy.
That's what they're saying.
That's what they're saying. And they probably have an illustration to back them up that's based on very wonderful assumptions.
Okay, now the problem with this is?
The loan is $40,000. It's earning, it's accruing interest. It's accruing interest either at or near the same, just above. At best, it's a wash, but it's going to hinder the growth in the rest of the money. So it's not growing. I mean, the loan's growing.
But which you lost 40%. In your example, you've lost 40% here.
And it won't grow as well as they always. Somehow, they usually don't work quite as well as illustrated.
Really?
It's not that they're bad. Just run the illustrations at more moderate assumptions. And, instead of a 6, 7, 8% internal return, run it at a more moderate assumption because things happen. They run it at, and this is things that you can't know unless you really read the small print. Ever seen those illustrations? They're like 15, 18, 20 pages long. There's some small print. And sometimes they'll say, we're assuming a better than expected mortality, increasing longevity. So we're going to reduce the cost of mortality from our current cost over time.
Yeah, well, we're going to increase it out to 120 years if you happen to live that long. Okay, hold on. We got more to talk about. If you're on hold, stick around. Alice, we'll get to your question next in Fort Worth, Texas. But we still have three lines open. 877-PLANNER. Money questions answered right here. All you got to do is ask. 877-PLANNER. We're coming right back. Well, we're learning a lot today, folks. Hope you're able to tune in for the entire hour and that you have for the last whatever it is that we've been on today, because we've had some great questions from people and great answers from Professor Plum. I like to see this. I like to hear this, because learning something, if you can walk away from the program a little bit smarter than you were when you tune in, and I try to do that every day, just get a little bit smarter, then I tell you what, we've been successful. And I think that's what we've done today so far. 877-PLANNER is our number. By the way, if you want to learn about any of the stuff that we talk about on this program, not only learn about them, but learn about retirement income and all the challenges that you're facing with retirement income and get your money questions answered, you can do so in person at one of the many retirement workshops that are happening around the country through Lucia Capital Group. This is the 2016 Retirement Income Strategies Workshops. You go to wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com. Look it up there. Find out where the Brain Trust is going to be. They're going to be in several cities between now and, the next several weeks. Look at it. Find out. Sign up. It's all free. Meet the Brain Trust, Professor Plum, Terry Keyes, and the local advisors. And, of course, most importantly, get your questions answered. Learn about retirement income, how to make sure, potentially, your retirement income does not go before you do. Let's put it that way. Okay, we got a bunch of stuff to talk about. Let's get to Alice, though, next in Fort Worth with a question or two. Hello, Alice.
Hi.
How can we help you today?
I've never set up a trust. There are a couple of people or heirs that I have that one is a very young child, and I doubt that I'll be alive when these two people are eligible to get the money.
Okay.
But one is a child, and I want them to have that money when they're of college age. Mm-hmm. And not all at once, because I don't want them to run out and spend it all.
Yeah.
The other is the person that can't access it for probably 20 years.
Okay.
Also, same thing. I want that money to go to them in payments. How do you arrange that?
Well, you can create what they call a revocable living trust for yourself. These are your assets, uh-huh. Right? This is money that you currently have bank accounts and things like that.
Right.
So you would create a revocable living trust, and then you would set up provisions for what would happen to the money if you pass away. Obviously, if you live 30, 40, 50 years, you're in control of the money. You can give it to them or not give it to them as you see fit if they make it to the right age and they do the right things. But the problem is, what happens if you don't make it to that age? To where they can show you that's happening, you need to have written documentation that says, I want this much money or this percent of my estate to go to this child, and I want this much to be held for the person who's been incarcerated until they become eligible for the money. And then you have to pick a trustee, somebody that you trust, typically somebody younger than you, but that can handle the money, so that when you pass away, they are now in charge of the money and they look at your directions. If this child goes to college, you can give them X amount of dollars or whatever they need for college. If they don't go to college, but they go to a trade school or whatever, you can do this. If they do that, if they turn into a bum or anything like that, they don't get any money. And they have to, so you can write it up any way you want so that they can get it at a later date. And then same thing for the person that is potentially incarcerated. It just, the money gets sent over there. It's held for them. It's managed for them by this trustee. And then at certain times in the future, upon release, they get 10%, 20%, 30%. Upon attainment of certain ages, they get money. So you get to write it any way you want. The big part here is you got to find somebody who's willing to then take over the management of those assets if you die too soon, and then manage it. This is what a living trust is all about. It will, when you pass away, it becomes irrevocable, and then it is managed by the successor trustee that you've selected, the way you've told them to manage it. You know, I've seen it written where if the person quits smoking, they get a big distribution of money. I've seen it held in a trust while the individual is married because the person that set it up didn't like the spouse. But if they ever become single again, they get a big distribution. People can be fairly vindictive when they do this. But
there are all kinds of ways to set it up.
You can write it any way you want.
Do you need a lawyer to do that? It sounds like you do.
The more creative you want to be on the control issues, the more I would definitely look into having help with that through an attorney of some sort.
Now, is that money held in a trust at a bank? I mean, you know how the print accounts that have been inactive for years and go back to the state, would that happen to money in a trust?
No, because the trustee would be involved in it. The trustee would, you don't have to hold it at the bank unless you want the bank to be the trustee. Now, if you choose a large corporate trustee, they're going to hold it at their bank, their brokerage company, and handle it. But you know, if you chose, you know, John Smith, your cousin or your nephew John Smith or Jane Smith, I don't want to be sexist here, to be the trustee, then presumably they will be managing the money. They'll be taking distributions for the child or for the other individual. They'll be investing it appropriately, and they'll be getting the statements and doing things. So the money doesn't have to just sit dormant for 20 years. So you shouldn't have to worry about it being back to the state. But there would be. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Would you need to have a backup trustee in case the trustee you left in charge was also not around?
I would want to have the trustee that I select, and I'd want to have a discussion with them today to make sure that they are willing to do the job. And you may even build in a pay scale for them. They get paid X amount percent, 0.5%, 1% a year for managing these assets. So because you're asking them to do some work, and so they should get paid for the time that they're doing it. Then you can add a successor trustee. If this person doesn't want to do it, isn't able to do it, gets killed, whatever the case, then the next person in line steps up and becomes the trustee. Or at least have some way for somebody to be elected as a successor trustee down the line.
Right.
This is where the attorneys will help you.
All right. Well, that's very helpful, and I appreciate your answers. Thank you.
You're very welcome, Alice.
Thank you for calling, Alice. The whole point of the living trust is to do exactly what you were
control.
Saying.
Control. There's two reasons to have a trust. One is probate. What we talk about the most in this. But the other is control. And she has legitimate concerns for some control of assets for somebody who's very, very young, and she doesn't know how they're going to turn out. And unfortunately, for somebody who cannot at this point own money because of
their situation.
Yeah, their situation. But at some point in the future, they will be able to have money. Now, the other side is, do you want somebody who's just coming out, you know, being released from prison after 20 years to have total control over, you know, 100,000, half a million, whatever the number is? You probably want to stage it in a little bit so they don't just get flooded with money.
Which is why, number one, it's important to have somebody who knows what they're doing set something like this up, the trust, number one. And number two, having a trustee of the trust that you can rely on.
And picking a trustee is so difficult because you don't want to pick somebody as a trustee. If you're going to control this money and say that, especially the older person, the one that's coming out of prison, if you're going to set it up that they can't have access to it immediately, they can get 20% of it, you know, and staged out.
Whatever it is.
You don't want somebody that could end up being manipulated by this person, that basically will do whatever this person says. Because, I've seen it where you don't want family members, especially.
Right, exactly.
I know somebody who did not want to put their younger brother as the trustee, even though there was... even though they were a financial individual, because he didn't want his kids. He knew his kids would wrap their uncle around their finger and just be able to, come on, can't we have that new car?
And it's up to the trustee.
Falls for it, but then if they don't fall for it, it can cause problems in the family relationships.
Right. So picking who you want as the trustee is important.
Very important.
Yeah, and some people prefer to use some kind of
That's why they get corporate trustees.
That's right. You have some sort of...
But you have to have enough money to have a corporate trustee. They don't handle $10,000 accounts.
No, they don't. But that's the way it is. Okay. 877-PLANNER, our number. We got some room on the phones. 877-752-6637. Questions and answers. We'll also get some of your emails as well. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, Bucket Strategy Investing from Lucia Capital Group. We're coming right back. Don't go away. PLANNER, our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, taking your calls. Get to some of your emails shortly. I wanted to go over this, though. By the way, lines are open. I wanted to go over some of these, not a ton of time on this, but the proposed changes or additions to retirement accounts.
Okay.
We had the budget put forth for 2017.
So we don't have enough choices in retirement plans right now.
Well, not everybody has enough. And there's concern, I guess, whether it's real or not, among some elected officials that people don't have enough retirement savings. Part of it might have to do with some of the cuts they put into Social Security, but never mind.
Well, I mean, and that is an issue. They're trying to incentivize people to save more money for their own retirement. Admirable idea. And so they then jump to the conclusion that the reason people aren't saving for retirement is because they don't have enough options to save for retirement.
Okay. Well,
bull.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, let's run down some of these. Just a couple of ways that proposals, again, in the president's budget does not mean that it's going to happen or anything like that. One suggestion was what they call pooled 401k plans, because
they're trying to make it less expensive for employers, specifically smaller employers, to have a 401k plan. So instead of trying to create one and run it all by yourself, you would end up getting together with other businesses, maybe in the same area or the same industry, to have a overriding 401k that would be offered by multiple employers. This one I don't have a big problem with, if it actually works.
Well, that's right. Now, currently, there's a law where if you have a common bond, employers would have what's called a common bond, they can form these pooled 401k plans and save some money because there's a lot of expense, especially for small
businesses. There's administration.
There's administration. It costs money
to get
it set
up. Well, also, the small plans don't have access to the it's quantity discounts. I mean, if you have a $5 million plan, you don't have the same options as somebody that has a $50 or $100 million plan in it. You have more availability for different investments, different things, than if you only have a small plan. And if
exactly.
you have a much smaller plan, you've got five employees, and between all of you, you've got $200,000 in there, it's quantity discount. There are certain expenses that are fixed. You have to have somebody do the accounting, do all this. And it's a lot cheaper per person once you get into the bigger plans.
Well, the rule change would allow nonprofits also to create retirement accounts for contractors and self-employed people, so who aren't eligible to do that. Now,
I would say I don't like that part of it.
What? Allowing
a self-employed person. So basically, you're an employer. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to be able to set up a retirement plan and cover all your self-employed people, all the contractors.
Yes.
The contractors, many of them don't want to be part of the plan because they want to do their own thing. So will that contractor have the ability to say, no, I don't want to be part of the plan because I don't want to be under your rules. I don't want to be in your plan. I want to do something different.
Could be. Maybe that's why they became contractors in the first place. That I don't know. Automatic IRAs. Here's another one. Employees are often automatically enrolled in 401k plans unless they opt out. What this proposal would do is automatically enroll workers without a workplace retirement into an IRA. Now, what do you think about this?
I think, well,
that's if you have more than 10 workers.
This is the start, whether it's automatic or not. Rather than creating a new type of retirement plan, this MIRA, which is a joke, why not just allow employers to do a payroll deduction for you to put it into your own IRA? They say that there's 30 million people that don't have access to a retirement plan at work. Fine, but they still have access to an IRA. And of that 30 million people, how many of those people do you think are not going to be, or that can put in more than $5,500, $6,500? That's an issue. So either raise the limits on the IRA contributions and allow for payroll deduction, then we don't have to create any new set of rules. We don't have to create other, we have the accounts all set up. We have the infrastructure there. It's all done. The only problem is a congressman can't sit there and call it their own name, like a Roth. But that's fine.
You think that's what they want to do, huh?
Let us do a payroll deduction to a Roth IRA or to a traditional IRA. That would be awesome. If it's automatic, that's fine too. I like the automatic enrollment because people don't think that they can afford to save. That's where the 30 million really aren't saving. It's not that they don't. Yes, there are a lot of people that don't have access to 401ks, and the only thing they have is IRAs, but that's a minority of that 30 million people that don't use IRAs. Most of those people don't believe they can do it. I mean, how many people have access to 401ks and don't use it? How many people have access to 401ks with a matching contribution and don't use it? That's not the fault of the 401k. That's because the people don't believe they can afford to save the money. So I actually like the automatic enrollment because it shows people when they get their check, they don't even notice that they're doing it in many cases.
They see what the net check is, and the next thing they know, if they check back in a few months, a year, they'll find that they got some money in there. Okay, now here's another proposal which would allow part-time workers who have worked at least 500 hours over a three-year period to participate in retirement plans.
Yeah, right now, typically a 401k or a retirement plan can exclude part-time workers that work less than basically 1,000 hours a year. 1,000 hours is half-time, 20 hours a week. So this would drop it way down to a lesser number. It's a cost issue because with a 401k, a retirement plan, per employee, it costs money, you know, for the accounting of it. And so a lot of employers try to limit how many employees they have in the plan so that they don't have to pay the fee for every, you know, somebody that works, you know, once a week on something or whatever the case may be. So they limit part-timers because they're some, you know, whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of employers include part-timers, but this is just a cost issue. And so that would mandate it down. So that's why, you know, it's all cost. The question, and I don't know the answer to this, would if they force it down to 500 hours a year, will employers who are kind of on the fence of offering a plan just stop offering a plan to everybody because it became too expensive? That I don't know.
I don't know either. And here's one. I don't understand this particular proposal. Again, these are some of the proposed changes or additions, amendments, whatever it is in the budget to retirement plans. Portable benefits. What this budget will propose, funding pilot programs that will make retirement benefits more portable as people change jobs, meaning they can bring it with them.
Well, they're not portable now?
Well, that's what I'm saying. We already have that, do we not?
And this is just, so they're going to fund a program to make it more portable. We've already got portability. If I retire or I quit, terminate, leave for whatever reason, even if I get fired, I can take my 401k and roll it to an IRA. And then later, I can take that IRA and roll it back to a new company's 401k or put it in. There's portability out there. I don't lose it. The only thing that's not potentially portable is a defined benefit plan. And a lot of companies don't offer the access to a defined benefit plan until you actually start taking the monthly check. And that actually, I think, makes sense for a lot of people who would probably blow the money in the first place. But that's a different game. But we already have portability. Why are we going to fund a new program to create more portability?
Well, they said nonprofit organizations and states would receive funding to design and evaluate retirement benefits that can accommodate job changes, intermittent deposits, unpredictable work patterns, and contributions from multiple employers. What they're looking at is the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which said that workers stay at a single employer for an average of 4.6 years. I mean,
okay,
again,
but that doesn't mean anything about portability.
No, it doesn't.
Now, the only thing that they're talking about there, for whatever reason, there must be a huge lobby off the nonprofit side. Because nonprofits, for a long time, have not been able to set up the same kind of retirement plans that a for-profit company could do. And they would set up thrift plans or some other thing that was not, and is not, a 457 plan that's not through a government entity is not portable. And so it can't roll over to an IRA. So if they're talking about nonprofits, in the world of nonprofits, there are still some plans that don't have the same portability. But that's not going to solve the retirement plan crisis.
No, that isn't going to do anything. I don't know. I think that was just thrown in there. Last thing, by the way, we'll get your calls in just a second. 877-PLANNER, our number. Gary, hold on. I know you got a trust question. Want to make sure we get to that, but give me just a second here. The last one was bigger tax breaks for employers. Small businesses currently get a tax credit when they set up a new retirement plan. I believe it's $500.
Yes.
The budget would triple the existing credit to $1,500. $1,500 per year for up to 3 years for small employers offering a new retirement plan. And small businesses that add automatic enrollment to their existing retirement plan would also get a tax credit of $500 per year for up to 3 years.
I like the idea.
I like tax credits.
I like the idea that try to incentivize more people to put in plans, but is it enough? I don't know. I don't know how many people are that worried that $1,000, $3,000 over a three-year period of time is going to incentivize them enough to put money into a retirement plan. That's not the major cost of the retirement plan.
It's the
ongoing aspects, and the matching contribution, the fact that the employer is limited on what they can put in by what everybody else puts in.
Okay.
I don't know if that's going to be, if that's actually going to do anything.
And again, you know, these are just proposals in the budget. They could all get shot down. Gee, that's happened before. But, you know, we pass them along to you just so you're aware of what's going on. Okay, we got to take a break here, but I want Gary, we're going to get you next. Want to make sure we give you enough time to ask your question. So hold on, if you would, just a couple of moments here. We'll come back to that with a trust question. We've got a couple more lines open. We'll try to get to everybody before the top of the hour and an email or two, should we have time. Our phone lines are open, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. Bucket Strategy Investing continues right after this. Great tunes. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Great tunes, great advice. And speaking of great advice, you're going to get it here in just a couple of weeks. Actually, it's less than a couple. I can't believe, where is this? Where are the 2000s gone? This is ridiculous. I've lost track. February 20th, if you want to meet the Brain Trust, Professor Rick Plum, and all the people involved, Terry Keyes and the local advisors, you can meet them and the rest in Las Vegas. Saturday morning, February 20th, is the 2016 Retirement Income Challenges, Retirement Income Strategies Workshops put on by Lucia Capital Group. Join them for free. That's right. You go to wealthed.com to sign up. Tell them you're going to be there. We'll do the rest. Well, you got to get there yourself. Las Vegas, Saturday, February 20th. Seattle, Washington happens on the 27th, the Saturday after that. And then on March 12th, it's Phoenix, Arizona. So keep those three in mind. There will be more after that. You go to wealthed.com to sign up. Las Vegas, Seattle, and Phoenix, the next three. More to follow. If you go to wealthed.com, you'll see the entire schedule that the Brain Trust has put together for the spring series of the 2016 Retirement Income Strategies Workshops. Be there. We'd love to see you there. All right, 877-PLANNER, hold off on the trivia for a moment. I want to get to a couple of calls. People have been hanging on, including Gary, who's next up in Honolulu, Hawaii. Hello, Gary.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help you today?
My question is, I just want to get a clear understanding of, my parents are deceased, and so we have an irrevocable trust.
Okay.
And there's two other siblings beside myself. And I just wanted to find out, when it's time to sell the property, does it have to be all three agreeing to sell? Or if one person doesn't want to sell it and the other two wants to do it,
Hey, Gary, who's the trustee of the trust?
The trustees, me and two other siblings.
So all three of you? All three of you are co-trustees?
Yeah, I guess if I understand this correctly, when my parents was living, one of the siblings was a power of attorney, and if that's, you know, when she passed away, then all three of us come successors?
Well, I mean, there's a trust involved, so there's got to be a trustee named, somebody who is in charge of the estate while it's in the trust. The trust is a separate entity.
Okay, one of my siblings is a trustee.
Okay, so if that one sibling is the trustee and they're the only trustee, then their opinion is the only one that matters. They can sell or not sell based on their interpretation of the way the trust is written. You don't have a say in it. Your sister doesn't have a say in it. The trustee is in charge of managing the estate and doing what they think is best for the beneficiaries with the assets in place. That means if they want to sell it and you don't, tough, unfortunately. They can sell it.
Oh.
If you want them to sell it, but they don't, now you are a beneficiary. So if you want to sell it, let's say that in extreme situation, the one that's a trustee is actually living in the house. And you're saying, well, wait a minute, I'm not getting anything out of this. You're getting a free house. You need to either pay my sister and I rent for our share of that house, or we really should sell it. There are ways for a beneficiary to go up and force that sale if the trustee is not doing what's in the best interest of all trustees involved. But if it's rented and you're each getting a share of the rents, and everything's being shared in equally between the beneficiaries, then it's going to be difficult to get them to sell it.
Yeah, no, he's not renting it or not, nothing. It's just
sitting there?
Home.
Oh, who's occupying it?
My brother is.
So the three of you are beneficiaries of this asset, and you're not getting anything from it, and your brother's kind of like exactly what I said. The brother's living in it for free, right?
Correct.
Yeah, you could probably force something in this area, but you would need to get an attorney to help you.
Okay, talk
to your brother and say, you know what? Talk to your brother and say, you know what? This house belongs to the three of us, not you alone. This house is, I'm a beneficiary of this trust. Either rent it from us and give us an income from it so that we can enjoy the inheritance as well, because right now we're not enjoying anything from our parents, and you're enjoying 100% of it, even though we're all equal beneficiaries. So we either need to sell this property and then you take your share of it and go buy your own place, or you need to pay rent. Now that's going to cause problems in the family. I can tell you right up front it's going to.
Yeah, but thank you very much for your answer. It's really helping.
Good luck.
Yeah, thank you, Gary. Well, that's kind of we had a similar call to this a few months ago, or at least a similar situation to this. It can be a mess.
It can be a giant mess, and this is where picking the trustee is very, very important. Because now, I haven't read the trust. I don't know that the trust doesn't say that this particular individual has the right to live there as long as they want to and not pass anything on to the other beneficiaries. Or I don't know what the trust says, but it would be unusual to
have set up.
Three beneficiaries. They're all sharing equally, and one of them basically takes all the assets for themselves. That's not right.
I have a feeling it wasn't quite set up that way.
We'll see.
Okay. I don't have time if you're on hold. Hang on a second. But trivia. Just I'm going to throw this in here just last minute of the hour. This is from the Census Bureau. Is it? Oh, no. Internal Revenue Service? Well, 15% of young adults aged 25 to 34 had moved back home and were living with their parents in 2014. You know, just 10% of children in this age bracket were living with their parents 30 years earlier in 1984. I don't know. What does this say?
Well, a lot of people.
What does this tell you?
It's taking longer to get through college. It's taking longer to get a job after college. And so, in the 80s, you were lucky to stay in the house while you were going to college. And now the parents are much more amenable to letting them move back because it's just so hard in many cases to get a career started.
Well, it's hard to get a career started. A lot of them are saddled with debt, mm-hmm. both the parents and the kids in some cases. Housing prices, you can't find a starter home anymore. You can't go out and find an $80,000 starter home.
No. It depends on the area of land. Where we live, no.
Well, I don't know where you can find any. If you can find an $80,000 starter home, the chances are good that you're not going to have a job that's concomitant with that.
Yeah, so. It's all relative to the wages in the area.
Yeah,
and the
exactly.
rents.
And the rents. And that's the other problem, too. Rents are also high. So, yeah. But why not?
If you My son moved back home for a year to save up money to buy, and now he's buying a place, and it's not $80,000.
Well, the down payment might be
80 square feet, though.
Wouldn't surprise me. We're out of time for this hour. If you need the Brain Trust off the air, you want to talk to Professor Rick Plum or any of the Brain Trust advisors from Lucia Capital Group across the country, their phone number off the air, 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. For Professor Rick Plum, I'm Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.